Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes.
Welcome, everybody. On the telephone today, we have Brian Shanks, the cider master and founder, and Warren Beveridge, the cider maker at Bold Rock Hard Cider in Mills River, North Carolina. Brian and Ward, tell us about yourselves, where you came from, how you got started in this business, and what you're doing out at your place now.
I started in a country in New Zealand and was an apple orchardist, started making cider, and we grew a very large company out of that. From there, we became probably the market leader and virtually pioneered cider as a hard cider as a drink in New Zealand. And from there, I amalgamated the company into H.B. Bulmer, who are the manufacturers of Strongbow cider, and we became a much bigger company. And I spent a few years in the UK actually working as a director of Bulmer's in the UK and learned an awful lot more about cider making. Then we went on and set up a cidery in China as a joint venture with a brewery there. Eventually ended up back in New Zealand again with the company I'd started there. And one day there was a telephone call, and it was a guy who said, "I'm an American." And I said, "Okay, well, that sounds interesting. Tell me more." And he said that he'd actually bought a farm in Virginia 25 years ago with a view to retiring on it. In that period, of course, an awful lot of development had taken place, and there were a lot of wineries, microbreweries, the rise of microbreweries in the area, and even a couple of distilleries. And he sort of rang me because he'd sort of seen that I'd had a lot to do with the development of the cider industry and said, would I be interested in partnering with him, creating something that he thinks cider would work in Virginia? I don't know, mate, but I'll tell you what, I'll hop on a plane and come and have a look. And that was 5 years ago. Julie came out, and I liked what I saw, and the farm was in exactly the right position, and we did a lot of research for about a year, and then one day we shook hands and said, let's form a company and let's make this happen. That was the birth of Bold Rock. And, of course, after we grew the company into quite a sizable company in Virginia, and then we looked to expand, my partner John Washburn had some of his roots in North Carolina. He said, well, there's an apple source in North Carolina, in Hendersonville, just out of Asheville. We should go and have a look at that. And, of course, once I came down here and saw Asheville, saw the Hendersonville and the areas and talked to some of the growers and looked at some of the apples, we just both knew instantly that this is where we had to be. So that's why we're here in Mills River.
Well, it sounds like a good typical decision-making process for a lot of people who've moved to this area. Certainly we're happy to have you there and taking advantage of the wonderful apples that we grow in Henderson County. I saw on the note that I had on the email that it says, your Bold Rock Hard Cider is the Mills River location. This implies you have more than one.
Because we have a large cidery in a little place called Nellisford, Virginia, which is just outside of Charlottesville, and now we have a larger one here in Mills River, 72 Schoolhouse Road, Mills River. So that's why we talk about this place or the other place.
I see. Okay, I was not aware of the Nellisville facility that you have. Okay.
Yeah, Charlottesville is it might be just a bit of a smaller version of Asheville. There's a lot of similarities, still in the Blue Ridge Mountains and surrounded by hills. Yeah, there's a lot of similarity. And up there, that particular area also has quite a large apple-growing background and a lot of large-scale commercial apple-growing as well. So in many ways, there is a little bit of similarity, although I have to say the scenery and the town of Asheville itself, I think here, is quite spectacular. And I certainly enjoy my time here and really feel very happy about having invested and established this company here.
We're happy you're here. Let's talk to Ward just for a second. Ward, how about you? Where'd you come from and how'd you get interested in the cider business?
Well, my story is a lot less interesting than Brian's was, but I had been interested in the brewing industry science major to try to kind of get my foot in the door that way. And I graduated in 2012, and that's right when Bold Rock was opening their first facility in Nellysburg. And Brian gave me a call, and I came and checked it out. And I graduated and drove over to Nellysburg and been making cider ever since.
Well, I'm glad to see I'm talking with another Hokie on the phone. I'm class of 62 in geophysics.
Oh, no kidding. That's awesome.
Yes, a few of the local people appreciate that. But the soil science part helps me because, as you may know, we have, my wife and I own a vineyard growing cold hardy muscadines, the only variety of cold hardy muscadines in the world found growing natively here in the mountains of North Carolina. And so the Jewel of Blue Ridge Vineyard is a teaching vineyard. We teach a lot of people how to do that. But one of the things I find from my background is quite helpful is understanding the dirt. Soil is where everything starts, from apples to grapes, as you know well.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about your particular facility down there. How many different kinds of ciders do you make?
Well, we have our two main brands, which are the apple and the draft. They're Carolina Apple and Carolina Draft down here. And those are the two that we started with originally. And then we branched off to Pear, and then the IPA, and most recently Honeydew that we just started bottling this week, actually. Those are our main Bold Rock brands that are coming out now. We also have a Crimson Ridge line, which are two more premium ciders. They're higher in alcohol, a little drier. The Crimson Ridge Vat number one is a little off dry, and we also have the Vintage Dry, which, as in the title, is more dry.
Well, to help the listeners understand a little bit better, when you talk about the percentage of alcohol being a little bit higher, you know, in the wine industry, we typically talk about anything from about 8% to 15%. Well, how does that work for ciders?
Well, our main line, the Apple, Carolina Draft, Honeydew, those are all 4.7. When I say the premium product, which is the two Crimson Ridge, those are 6.9.
Okay, that's in the typical beer range, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We stay right around those areas. It helps out a lot when we're on tap and things like that, because we've gotten a few concerns with other people that their ABVs may be a little too high with cider, so people can't really drink it as a sessionable product as much as they can Bold Rock, whereas it's 4.7%. You can have a few and still drive home.
Yeah, that's a very serious concern as we develop the viticulture industry, is to making sure that there's a good way, safe people to try drinking various things at the wineries and so forth, and be able to get home safely. So I'm glad to see that that's on your mind too.
There's a sort of a general trend almost worldwide, I think, in a lot of countries anyway, to actually try and not go over the top with alcohol levels. I know, for instance, in my background in Australia in the wine industry, that you know, many of the wines there were getting 14% and 15%, and even restaurants and places, you know, the consumer end was saying people were coming in, they weren't drinking a glass of that while they had their lunch, because a full glass of wine at 15% can really make you not very productive in the afternoon, as well as driving. So people weren't enjoying it as much. They were worried about the alcohol content, even though some of those high alcohol products are very good products. The alcohol content was a problem. So we felt that pitching around about the 4.7 to 5% for cider is just nice, easy quaffing style, and you don't have to worry quite so much, and it just makes life a lot easier.
Well, I agree with that. By the way, Brian, where in Australia did you work?
Well, I had my company with Ball Harvest. We were right through in, and we were just out of Sydney in another factory in Perth. And my partner, the Baldwin's family, sold out to Foster's, and I ended up being in partnership with Foster's Brewery over there. And I did spent a lot of time in Australia. So and I was also tied up in the wine industry a little bit.
Well, about I don't know, maybe 15 years ago now, I used to go down. Oh, for years, I'd go down to Australia and spend time with some friends up in Hunter Valley. And I'd go down there and hang out in February January and February and help with harvest and starting the winemaking process. And that's where I learned a lot of good stuff about winemaking from my Aussie buddies.
Yeah, there's a great wine industry in that area in Hunter Valley. But then again, I was referring to some of the really big reds that come out of the Barossa Valley, and that's over there. And they can very easily, with the climate and the intensity, and you have these whopping great heavy reds that can easily be 15%. And whilst they're really beautiful, you've really got to be sitting somewhere and you've got a good driver to take you home afterwards.
Well, I've been over to Barossa areas in the Melbourne region there, and I know that's a fantastic wine that comes out of that region. But you also mentioned something out in Perth. I wasn't aware that there was any activity for very many wineries and breweries and so forth in Perth.
Oh, there's quite a wine industry in Perth, and there was quite an apple industry there. So we had a cidery in there.
At this point in time, guys, we're going to take a break. We've been speaking on the telephone with Brian Shanks and Ward Beveridge from the Hard Rock Group down in Mills River, North Carolina. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by
Roy Rattan's Underwater Basket Weaving Classes. Roy earned a college certificate in Crafts and Arts at the Mountain Bog Community College last year. He majored in cane chair repair and was impressed by the way the cane became much more manageable to cane seat bottoms when it was first soaked in water. That is where Roy had his Shazam moment. His big idea was to offer the very first underwater basket weaving classes. He built a small dam across the creek in his backyard and placed a number of flat stones on the bottom of the creek to sit on. He arranged a series of hanging pulleys from the tree branches so the spools of cane material could be easily spooled into the water by the students sitting on the underwater stone seats. His students would sit with their heads above water while they worked with the craft projects underwater. But there was so much chatter going on by everybody in class gossiping that it drove Roy a little crazy. Roy liked peace and quiet where he worked. That's when he got the idea of having everyone bring their own scuba gear so they could be totally underwater as they worked weaving their craft projects. He built the dam a little higher so that all the students were completely underwater. Now it was quiet during class. However, one of his students, Cecil, was chewing tobacco. Spitting with a scuba mask on is a bit tricky and leaves your scuba mask looking pretty nasty. Another student in the same class, Alice, took one look at Cecil's mask one day and had to leave class to heave along the creek bank. She never came back. Roy had to change his smoke-free environment sign to a tobacco-free environment to prevent future students from creating a problem. Roy Rattan's Underwater Basket Weaving Class is another special small business in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can sign up for Roy Rattan's Underwater Basket Weaving Class today at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298, including craft materials. But remember to bring your own scuba gear to class. Sign up today and get a free lesson in underwater rope making from Roy Rattan's rope making specialist. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been interviewing on the telephone today Brian Shanks and Ward Beveridge of the Bold Rock Hard Cider Company down in Mills River, North Carolina. Well, Brian and Ward, just before the commercial, we were talking about a variety of things, and I'd like to jump back on some of the processing that you folks use down there and where your apples come from. Do you grow your own? You buy them from local growers? Tell us a little bit about the process that goes on there at Bold Rock Hard Cider.
Well, basically, we make hard apple cider, and of course that comes from apples, as everybody knows, and yes, we're very fortunate, as we were talking about before, to have such a wonderful resource in Hendersonville that's been there for, 150-odd years, and we have growers out there that are into their fourth and fifth generation, and they really know how to grow apples and how to handle the climate and the soil systems and which slopes of the hills grow the best varieties, etc. And we've been very fortunate by coming here that we happen to find one of the growers, apple wedge packers, that also are able to press apples. So whilst in Nellisford, Virginia, we had to install our own pressing gear, here we don't, because he's got a state-of-the-art press. So We select our apple varieties and with him and the volumes, and then he essentially presses the apples for us, and we tanker the juice into our cidery here, and that starts the whole cider-making process. So perhaps I could just pass over to Ward here now to just talk about that process as it goes through.
Okay, so we have the juice pumped in from a tanker about 5,000 gallons at a time, which is perfect for one of the size tanks we have that just kind of worked out. Then at that point, basically, I will check specific gravity, run tests on it, make sure I have the right juice that I need for the right product that I want. And then I pitch the yeast and let it go for about 9 to 10 days usually, just again depending on several variables. It's never exactly the same. We try to make it as scientific as it is, or as we can, but when it comes down to it, we're living with living organisms that we're working with, and they have a mind of their own sometimes.
Well, just to make sure I understood, you don't grow any apples, and you really don't buy apples. You're actually just buying the juice from the orchards.
Well, yes. We take the juice, but effectively we're buying the apples as well. So we're buying the apples from the growers and doing it. Now, we unlike some cideries, we're making cider all year round. So we access fresh fruit coming off the orchards in the season, and then we follow up by pool stored fruit. And then we finally get to the tail end of the season. We're into what's called controlled atmosphere fruit, which really is where the cool stores are placed under vacuum, and essentially the oxygen is drawn out. They create a vacuum and then replace that with nitrogen and carbon dioxide. So that means that naturally the apples, just their metabolism slows, and they basically stop the ripening process. And that way we can get apples all year round. So that's the basis of how we do that. And there's nothing new about that. I mean, that's how supermarkets are able to supply really crisp, crunchy apples at odd times of the year as well.
I was privy to a group up in Minnesota. It was Cornelius, and they developed a special automated cold storage warehouse where they put bananas in there from Panama and kept them halfway through the winter, and then they would change the gas somehow and make them ripe and then put them out to the local stores. I thought that was an amazing thing.
Yes, I think that's pretty true. Most bananas, I think they pick them very green and then do that. But we're just picking apples that are, you know, we're sourcing apples that are really being grown for the main, fresh apple market, and then they're graded off the packing line and whatnot and stored for us. And we go through quite significant quantities. I mean, the scale of our operation, we can use anything up to about 30 tons of apples a week.
Wow.
All year round, which is quite significant, really. Because the apples, the various apples change the, you know, as in grapes, different varieties have different flavors. We tend to like dealing with the bigger growers and the bigger people who can coordinate, so we can get the right mix of varieties that we're looking for all year round. So some of our products, for instance, our main leading product, Carolina apple, for instance, is we like to get predominantly maybe up to 60% of Granny Smith or green apples, green style apples like that, to give the cider its nice sort of fresh, crisp, refreshing, slightly Granny Smithish type feeling to it. But the balance of that 60 or 65% can be any variety of apple, which just adds a sort of a complexity and a nice balance instead of being overly tart. You know what I mean? It's kind of so. Selecting the right apples for the right batches as we go to make the right brands of cider that we have is a very important part of the business.
It's very much like blending in the wine business.
We also do the blending because one of our other products we call Carolina Draft is we do it the other way around. We select more red apples and cut down on the number of Granny Smith or greener apples that we've got there, and by doing that allows us to produce something that's a little bit more specialized, a little bit more sessionable, and instead of crisp apple and the alcohol balanced by acids, we end up with a nice, round, smooth, mellow, easy-to-quaff style of cider, which is a little bit different. And then, of course, we can blend some of the juices from those together and create even more different types of cider. So that's really how we go. But I'll tell you, once we've got the juice fermented, Ward can tell you a little bit more about the filing process.
Well, I have a question that just you raised. I sat in on a session. This goes back maybe, 4 years ago, 5 years ago maybe. I was sitting in on a session about cider makers. This is before we had the business sort of developing bigger than it was at that time, of course. But there was some discussion, but there are only like two or three kinds of apples that are really worthwhile using for making cider. And they were using some German data to say this or claim this. Are you familiar with that kind of thing, Brian? Because it seems like you're using all kinds of apples.
Well, yes, we are. I mean, there are what have always in the past been regarded as traditional cider apples, and they're bittersweets and apples that are really not culinary apples that you can eat. They're normally characterized by having sugar, which means they're sweet, but they're termed bittersweets because they also have high tannin content. However, there aren't a lot of those about, and it's very hard to build an industry and a brand around such a scarce product as that. So we have used, as a philosophy, we like to think that all these apples are grown here, and we use our cider-making skills to produce ciders that we think people like, and we're making some very, very good ciders, and I think winning a lot of medals and awards as a result of that, and we're making that out of the apples that are already here, that are already grown. It's a little-known fact, perhaps, that a lot of smaller apples have a higher acidity and a higher tannin content than larger apples. So by mixing sizes of apples, we can also increase the amount of tannin content that we get in our juice.
Ward, maybe you can give us a little bit of information about what kinds of fining processes you use and what kind of yeasts you might use to get these different flavors to come out of your cider.
Absolutely. Well, we'll start with the yeast, since that's really the first thing in the process. I'm a big fan of champagne yeast, different varieties of champagne yeast that allows for a more carbonated feel without even carbonating it at first, because it keeps in that CO2 gas and it's finer bubbles like you'd find in a champagne, which is what we really want in a cider as well. We actually force carbonate. I'm not sure if you are aware of that or not. With our saturator, basically we take a still cider and we chill it down to about 34 degrees the night before, and we run it into the saturator where it's a highly pressurized tank, and it force feeds CO2 gas into it and actually allows for those very fine bubbles to continue to come out. When we're talking about the actual cider making process itself, after the ferment is done, we want to clear it out, obviously. You don't want to have a cloudy cider. It's eventually going to settle on its own, but we use a clay. It's called bentonite, and we actually will mix it up with hot water and circulate it in the tank with the cider, and it will settle out in tenfold faster with that. It just grabs on to a bunch of particles and grabs on to imperfections in the cider and helps them to settle out very easily and quickly.
The geologist in me can't help but say that the other use that we have for bentonite clay big time is for putting in the bottom of ponds. It helps to seal the ponds.
Well, yes, it's a particular type of clay, and it swells up, and of course, the proteins and various things that cause hazes that we want to take out are the opposite. So one's negatively charged and the other are positively charged, and they lock together and drop out. But it's a very, very safe, very, very, we often joke it's also called Wyoming clay because most of it comes from Wyoming. And we often joke that we're a little bit guilty of leaving a little bit of Wyoming every day in North Carolina. But it's only a little bit, I can promise you that. A lot of wineries use all sorts of things to fine, and they use materials like casein, which actually comes from milk, which is a milk product. They use isinglass, which actually comes from a fish bladder. We think that the best results we've had is by using Wyoming clay.
We've been learning some interesting things about things going on down there at Bold Rock Hard Cider. Let's help the radio audience. How can we find you?
Anybody who cares to look up www.boldrock.com will see everything there is about us, our story, our history, our brands, our everything else. If you care to drive, we're only, about 15 minutes out of Asheville. We're just down the road past Sierra Nevada Brewery and, 72 Schoolhouse Road. It's we're very easy to find, and we have tours. We have what I think is more interesting to us, to a lot of people here, is that we have a full production line here as well, which is currently running 5 days a week, but very shortly it'll be running 6 days a week. And you can see the whole process, really, of the cider coming in and going through, the bottles being labeled, and we have big glass windows there, the huge big glass window displays right behind the bar, so you can stand there drinking, watching cider being made in behind you. The bottling line's whizzing along, and we do something like 20,000 bottles a day, every day. So there's something to see and do all the time.
So you do offer tours?
Yes, certainly. There are tours all the time on demand, and at weekends probably every half an hour.
So do you have any other events that go on there? Like some people have special party rooms or, you know, weddings and that kind of thing?
Yes, we're still relatively new here, but we are gradually finding a lot of local organizations are starting to use the place as well. And yes, we're just getting quite good crowds, and we think we're just a point of difference out here. You know, there's quite a few breweries here now, and more breweries popping up around us all the time. I think there's three new breweries since we've actually, when we opened here in October last year. There's been three new breweries around us already, and it's quite a nice little drive out here now.
Folks, we've been talking on the phone with Brian Shanks and Ward Beveridge of the Bold Rock Hard Cider down in Mills River, North Carolina. Brian and Ward, we really appreciate your taking time to be with us today, and thank you so much for helping us with our radio show today.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you. Pleased to talk to your listeners.
I'll look forward to coming down your way sometime soon and trying some of those wonderful goods that you guys are producing down there.
Excellent. We look forward to seeing you.
Okay, folks, that's our program for today, and we'll call that a wrap.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!